Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants. Price may vary.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth chat, discussion, and analysis of every Premier League match week and a little bit of Champions League as well. I'm Robbie Musto, and Robbie can't make it today, but we've got a very special guest. Tim Howard is going to join us for today's show. Before Tim, let's just go through the topics of today's episodes, and they are what we learned from Chelsea and Man United's scoreless draw at Stamford Bridge. Man City beat the Hammers thanks to goals from their centre-back duo. Liverpool back to winning ways in the Premier League at Sheffield United. An impressive Gareth Bale scores a brace in Spurs' 4-0 victory against Burnley. And West Brom's win overshadowed by Lee Mason's controversial decision. That's what we've got coming up in today's episode.
The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all on its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and A-Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric never could be. It was built with a driver in mind, just like Acura's been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience the electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
All right, my friend. Thanks, first of all, Tim, for coming in and joining us. You know the deal. We just go through the main talking points, the main games of the last match week in the Premier League. As always, there's always a topic, always a story, and there's always a big game, Tim. And this match day, the big game was always going to be Chelsea against Manchester United. We were in the studio. We saw it. It was 0-0, disappointing. Now, I've heard reaction from Tuchel saying it was a quality game. Others can say it lacks quality, that teams look tired. Lots of different places to start here. Just your overall initial thoughts, Tim, of this game and your expectations and how they weren't or weren't met.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. I love the Two Robbies podcast. I've been itching to get on and waiting my turn. So today's the day, and I appreciate you having me. These big heavyweight clashes, there's often not a lot of big moments. So the big games don't have a lot of big moments. Very few and far between because the teams are so talented and they cancel each other out, and the managers are very astute and they like to tactically tweak things, you know, to stop the other team in terms of the firepower. And that's what we saw today. I think Manchester United play a little bit off the cuff. They've got some supremely talented players in Rashford and Bruno Fernandes. Luke Shaw was good today on the outside left, and I thought Fred played exceptionally well. And so they have players who can win a match, but I don't think overall that they have the identity as a team of how they're going to win games. They do win games, quite often, but it's because of individual brilliance more than it is the team tactic. And I think with Tuchel, as well as he's doing in his 9 games, he's chopped and changed the team. And what happens when you chop and change the team? As a player, you're human, and so you're wondering, you're looking over your shoulder, am I going to play the next game? Do I force things to get on the manager's radar so I play the next game? Do I play it safe so I don't make any mistakes so that I can get out, I can play the next game for the manager? Tuchel needs to settle on his best team. It's been 9 games now. He should have an idea, particularly with the front three, because Robbie, as you know, when you start getting a front three, it's you go off movement and you go off mannerisms, and you understand how a player likes the ball, where he likes the ball. You don't even have to think. That's called rhythm. That's called a connection. And when you gel, you need time to gel, and the players haven't had a chance to do that.
I think it's a good point. I could understand it initially, Tim, where a new manager wants to look at different players, different combinations. And I think to be fair, he's been pretty strong with the three centre backs and mostly the centre midfield players. But I think you're right. I think the most important part of their game right now is that final, as he says, the 20 metres and that, the final third, basically, and how they're creating. And I think you're right. I think certain attacking players will understand the little flicks around the corner, the little leaves, the little balls in behind, maybe, and the way that they combine. And it was changed up again today from Thomas Tuchel. That is the position or the area of the field that they're not playing particularly good. And I thought maybe the most disappointing in terms of the passing from Chelsea. And this is, of course, a step up with Man United, high-pressing them, starting the game. I thought United really well in that first half and were the better side. But I was disappointed. The manager, Tuchel, said afterwards that at halftime they talked about passing the ball better. And the second half, they were better. It's just, I don't know. When's Christian Pulisic going to start? Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, we don't know, Tim, and we have to say that out front. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes. We don't know if Christian Pulisic has something that's nagging a little bit, and the manager's not confident of playing him.
Sure.
That being said, would you be worried if you're Christian Pulisic or Pulisic fans that he's not started yet with him and he's not having much game time, or is it too? We can't be strong enough because you don't really know the full details behind it.
Well, when I think about Christian Pulisic, it's a bold statement. He's not really disappointed. He's never really disappointed. Every time he's been patient, he's waited his turn. He's not spoken at a turn. Lampard, he had to win Lampard over, and then all of a sudden, he's the first name on Lampard's team sheet because even when he comes in as a substitute and has very limited time, he gets on the ball, he gets assists, he gets goals at the end of games. He's always in the thick of it. And so when I look at Chelsea's best front three, I think Pulisic on one side, Mason Mount on the other, and Giroud probably at the top. Now, if he gets tired, he's a little bit older now, can't play every game, then maybe you play Werner in there just as a little bit different dimension. He's not going to be your out and out number nine. He's gonna run the line a little bit differently. But Christian Pulisic takes up spots in the pocket just in front of the defenders. He's a nightmare for him. And Mason Mount, they don't allow you to mark them. Once they get the ball and get on the half turn, now as defenders, they're going, I want no part of that. You saw it today. Mason Mount, even in a kind of a drab game, he drags defenders back towards their own goal because they're afraid to get tight. Christian does the same thing on the other side. So I think when it comes, they've had a lot of signings, and so you have to give people chances. And Ziyech today, I thought, was a non-factor. But and I know you did as well. But his time will come. He just needs to bide that time.
Yeah, I think it's interesting when you think about what the best three should be. I do like what you just said there with Mason Mount and Pulisic. And Timo Werner for me would be the number nine. Sure. Now I know that, and I kind of get the Tuchel said that he likes him better coming from the left hand side, and I understand that with his right foot. But I think, like you just said, Pulisic, Mason Mount floating in behind and playing those little through balls, going back to the chemistry that might build with these three young, exciting, talented players. I mean, there will be times for Giroud and Tammy Abraham, but I would like to see that a little bit more consistently. It's just like Pulisic must be thinking, well, I just want to play more. And that, I think that just in that conversation for me is where Chelsea are not quite there yet. Mm-hmm. I got to give them credit for the defensive. Another clean sheet today, Tim. Yep. They're looking strong defensively. The wing-back situation fluctuates and changes, and we saw changes again today. But I think there's less chemistry involved in wing-backs. They go up and down, and they'll add something a little bit different, whoever it is. It's just that front three. And if that gets better, then they will get better. Just swinging it back to United, Tim, before we kind of you know, in terms of what disappointed from them, I'll tell you what I expected. I expected United to be a little bit more on a counter-attack, so they're a little bit more front foot than I thought, and but Bruno and Rashford to really be the threat that could really hurt Chelsea. I saw Hudson-Odoi and Azpilicueta. I'm thinking, wow, Marcus Rashford can get in between those.
Yep.
We never saw it. We never saw Bruno on the ball too much. We never saw Rashford where we like to see him dribbling from that left-hand side. Were you surprised about that? And going back to the bigger picture that I think we both talked about in the show is, did they look tired? Did they tire in the second half? Is that why they didn't get to the right side of Chelsea back four that we thought they might?
Well, I think the surprise for me was Mason Greenwood. He's not a number nine. He's not an out-and-out number nine. And that's not a criticism of him, because his best position or profile is wide on the right, so he can come inside on the left foot. He's a really good striker of ball. He runs well. He's an intelligent footballer. He didn't allow United to get brought into the game. A striker needs to bring the team in the game, and that doesn't just mean buying fouls. It doesn't just mean taking the ball off your chest. It means being able to run into the channels, hold the ball, get turned, connect passes, and bring the team up the pitch. So when that doesn't happen, we can talk about Rashford all day. We can talk about Daniel James on the other side. It's going to be difficult if the ball doesn't get held up and they don't get territorial possession. It's very difficult for those wingers to get higher up the pitch, and that's what you saw today. And Rashford and Fernandez in turn suffered.
Do you think they look tired, Tim? They did play on Thursday when they could have been rested by the manager. They played, I think, maybe a half a game each.
Yeah, I do. I think it's strange when, particularly as you get later in the season, which we are, managers normally look for little windows or pockets to rest players. And that was an opportunity, a missed opportunity, to rest some of their bigger players, knowing that there's a massive, massive game on the weekend against Chelsea. One, they needed to try and keep pace if there was any hope for a title. This was the opportunity to get 3 points. And so it was an opportunity missed to rest players.
Now, the big talking point in many ways in this 0-0 game was a potential handball and a potential penalty. And like anything with handball, Tim, there's always subjectivity, different opinions. We had the same opinion on the day. Callum Hudson-Odoi and Mason Greenwood that go for a bouncing ball inside the penalty box. So let's just peel it back to the rules here. And the rules are, first of all, any handball that when a player's arm, in this case, an attacking inside the penalty box, is clearly, this is in the rule, clearly above the shoulder, it's an automatic foul and then penalty. I think most people will see that the arm, when it strikes his hand, and it probably does strike his hand, is around roughly level with his shoulder. And then you get into, okay, is he making himself bigger? Right. And I think where his arms are, yeah, you could probably argue that. Then the final piece is it in an expected position? And this is the biggest subjective part. And I think, wow, when there's two players coming together, and I guess the YouTubers will see this, you're gonna feel for your opponent.
Absolutely.
You're gonna reach your arm out, Tim. I don't know how you reach your arm out and try and grapple with a really low position. That's where, for me, it crossed the line of, you know what, it's kind of expected for those arms to be there, and the ball just kind of bounced, bobbled around. It strikes the hand, maybe of both of them. Nobody appealed on the time. At natural speed, I don't think it looked like a clear error that he didn't give the penalty. Just try and make me understand, Tim, where I'm wrong there, and the other people argue that it wasn't in an expected position, because there's many people out there thinks it should have been a penalty.
Sure, and I can't argue with your point, because I see it the same. The hand was below the shoulder. The expected position is the fact that Greenwood is coming towards the ball. Odoi is coming towards the ball. He has a right to jostle with the opponent to get an advantage physically, to put his arm onto Greenwood to try and nudge him out of the way. That's normal. That's natural. And that's where his arm was going. It wasn't going high. He wasn't looking away. He was trying to jostle for position with Greenwood. At that moment, it hits his hand. So it's an expected position. The hand is below the shoulder. Therefore, for me, it's no penalty.
Yeah, we agree on that, mate. And again, that's what in some ways, Tim, when we're in the studio, it's a blimmin' artist thing to do is to try and look at these different angles and figure out these decisions.
Yeah.
Not easy, of course, the referee doing it. But yeah, I mean, just it was a disappointing game. We expected more. Maybe all these games at these players. If you look at both of these teams, it's midweek weekend. And I know that Man City, and we're going to talk about Man City in a second, maybe have done the best of rotating to keep a fresh-looking side. I just thought, particularly United, didn't look fresh in that second half, and maybe their performance just suffered as a result of that. Okay, mate, let's move it on to the other team in Manchester, the team that are looking fresh. They beat West Ham United on Saturday, 2-1. Ruben Dias scored the first goal in 30 minutes. And Mikel Antonio equalised for West Ham in the 44th minute. And John Stones, the other centre-back, scored for Man City to win the game. It wasn't super slick Man City, Tim. Mm-hmm. But again, I think teams get in losing habits. Man City are obviously in a winning habit. I think that's 20 wins in a row. Mm-hmm. Anything stand out in this game for you?
Well, a few things. And we think of Manchester City as a slick passing football team that's expansive, that open you up and they press you high. That's what they are, absolutely. What I thought was interesting was, when we get to David Moyes and West Ham in a second, they came to stifle Manchester City, and they did that. They played well. They forced everything to the outside. They clogged up the middle and said, you can't have it. And they did that really, really well. And what I like about Manchester City is they didn't get frustrated. Their resilience to find a way, any way, to score goals and win the game. And that wasn't through their world-class footballing midfielders or strikers. That was through the two center backs, basically on set pieces or second phase of set pieces, yep, winning headers, and a center back with an absolutely clinical striker's finish. Mm. It was really good to see the balance in Manchester City because, as Pep said, they're going to have to win ugly sometimes, and this was an example of that.
Yeah, you know what? We always know there's going to be rotations. Mm. You didn't have Cancelo didn't start, Sterling didn't start, Rodri, Foden, other players rest as well. Their bench was ridiculous, by the way. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, this could be difficult against West Ham. They're confident, they're strong, yeah, with so many changes. Again, of course, they got the victory. But Sergio Aguero was the good news, the big starter, Tim. We don't expect amazing things from Sergio Aguero straight away. But how important is he going to be this season? And how did he look in his first game back for a while?
Well, I'm not sure his importance will be felt anymore this season. I think they have enough. They have enough quality to win the title. It's nice to see him back. He has become a club legend, rightfully so. I think they should probably build a statue for him. Honestly, I think he's been that good.
Yeah,
he's coming to the end, you know, and it's just good to see it. He's dealt with a ton of injuries. He's been in and out of the lineup because of that. I think it's important that we realize every good thing comes to an end. And so we'll see. It's going to be hard for him to get fit, be 90 minutes fit all the time. The injuries, the age, it takes its toll on players. But it's good to see him back. It's a breath of fresh air for those City players. Now, that being said, they're going to have to go out and get a number nine. Jesus hasn't been up to the standard of what City is expecting. Aguero can come in as a sub and play a part. And he, as I said, he has a good influence on the team. But ultimately, they have to get a world-class number nine if they're going to continue to be as good as they are. And listen, they are fantastic.
That's interesting, Tim, because I know he hasn't scored a Premier League goal in over a year. I guess I'm just trying to pick up a difference between us. I still think I think he's got more of an important role to play than you do. Mm-hmm. I mean, what is he? I think he's 31, is he? Mm. Sergio Aguero. I know he's had a ton of injuries. You still think that we won't see a Sergio Aguero that's going to be near what we saw before and those goals? You know, I guess I want to ask you again. You don't think he can get back the sharpness, Tim, that we've seen over recent seasons?
I think I think it's a luxury, and it's a good luxury to have. Meaning, he's 32. The injuries have piled up. Yeah. Do I think he can come in and make an impact? Yes. Do I think he can give you a good shift every other game? Yes. And so that's a good luxury to have. I don't know if he can hit the heights that he once did because of the age and because of the injuries. And look, that's real. It takes its toll on every player. And he's played so many games for his club, for his country. And there was a time where he was ever present. He played every game. Every minute he could get on the pitch, he was there. And so, you know, those are the heights that he hit. I don't know if we can get back to that. Obviously, he's a special quality player. So without question, we will see some moments of greatness. There's no doubt. But I think they're going to be few and far between. I think the consistency is where he needs to get back to.
Yeah, I mean, Man City have been super consistent, Tim. And so have West Ham United. I just want to give us a couple of lines or a few minutes on West Ham United. They lost this game, of course. But I tell you what, I didn't half enjoy watching them play. I don't half enjoy watching a team come together under a manager that has a certain way, a certain drive, a certain expectation, which I'm going to get your take on David Moyes in a minute. But I was just impressed with them. And Tim, each podcast, we'll do a underappreciated performance or performer of the match week, and I'm going for a West Ham player. I know they lost, and I don't think we often do that, or maybe we've ever done it before, but Vladimir Soufal, the right fullback or right wing back in this game, I just love the way that he plays and his performance level, some of the blocks that he made, his energy, his quality in defending and determination defending, I thought was exemplary. I think he is underappreciated. I'm sure not with David Moyes and West Ham United, but in the Premier League and fans in general. Mm. And the images of him after the game, now he's holding his head. He looks super down and upset with the performance. Now, again, granted, he looks so devastated. Mm. You do wonder actually what's going on in his life. And then maybe there's other things going on that we don't understand or don't know about. Sure. But I just thought his commitment and that image of him afterwards with his head in his hands after a great performance, he wins my underappreciated performance in a West Ham team that has improved so much under your old gaffer, David Moyes.
Well, I think that shows you how far they've come, right? Barely staving off relegation last year. And now, head in hands, when you lose to what we think are going to be the champions, Manchester City, they've come a long, long way. And when I think of West Ham, I think of arrogance without ego. And that is, they go into the games thinking they can win. They have a drive, they have a determination about them. And their best players, Mikel Antonio, Declan Rice, Suchek, these are players who give everything for the team. Yet they have the arrogance to believe they can win. Jesse Lingard comes in, a guy who we think, hey, yes, you're young, but you're going to need to start to repair this reputation and get people back on side thinking this is the young player we thought could be a superstar. And all he's done is come in and be sensational and brilliant for David Moyes and West Ham. So it speaks a lot to the manager, David Moyes, about how he's gotten these players on side, believing in them, believing in the club, because West Ham is a massive club. It's a brilliant football club, and believing in the manager. And you see all three of those things come together, the way they enjoy themselves, the way they celebrate goals, the way it hurts them when they lose a football match. That's what you want to see. And I think they've been really, really, really good value. And they're in the top four. Can they sustain that? That's going to be difficult. But I tell you what, with the belief they have, I wouldn't put it past them.
You're going to speak to David Moyes, I believe, Tim Howard, next week, I think on Wednesday. Yeah. What are you going to ask him?
Well, I just want to know, since he left Everton, and he had brilliant years at Everton, he's gotten some stick down the years, and I know the heart of the man, and I've played for him for 8 years, and again, brilliant relationship that we had as a player and a manager. And I'm just really curious as to, he's back to his best as a manager, and that team mirrors him, and that's the David Moyes we know. And so I really want to know, get inside of his thought process in terms of what exactly has he done differently with this West Ham team? Because it really, if you were to say, this is what a David Moyes team looks like, West Ham is a picture of that. And so I'm looking forward to kind of hearing some of the stories that he has about, as I said, the likes of Antonio and Suchek and Declan Rice. These are players that arguably are going to start being talked about from other clubs, dare I say, bigger clubs. And so he's got some really good talented players on his hands.
Yeah, just finally for me on the recruitment, I always remember back in the day when I used to play against the Man United side that won everything. I remember thinking that this club signs the best hardworking players. I think I've said it before on this podcast, the best hardworking players. So the hardworking part is you've got to have it.
Yep.
And United could afford, and they could poach the best technical, hardworking players. And whether it's Lingard, Mikel Antonio, Suchek, Declan Rice, they all work hard.
Yep.
And they've got talent as well. And that's the hard part of the recruitment. But no, I think West Ham deserve a mention right now. A lot of people feel they're going to finish in the top four. Wow. That would be, we're talking manager of the season type
Absolutely.
Of deal.
Absolutely.
If that happens. Won't be easy, but Mao, a magnificent job that David Moyes is doing. All right, let's move on to the next game, Tim. Liverpool.
Yeah.
God, so much written about Liverpool. On paper, should have been a fairly comfortable game at Bramall Lane against Sheffield United. They did win the game 2-0. Curtis Jones scored in the 48th minute, and there was a Kean Bryan own goal a little later. Are they back to where they want to be, Tim?
I don't think they're going to be able to get back to where they want to be. So the answer to that is no. They've had too many decimating injuries to the squad. It's a laundry list of players. And I'm not talking fringe players. These are massive players. Van Dijk and Gomez and Jota and Henderson and Matip. The list goes on and on and on. And Thiago missed a ton of games. We know how talented he is. And so they're not going to be able to get back to where they were. Not certainly not this year. And so this win, I credit the Liverpool players. They had a really difficult week with Alisson, who's a clearly a leader for them, losing his father in a tragic drowning accident. That's going to hit the heart of every single player. And Curtis Jones talked about dedicating that to Alisson after the game. So we know what it means to the squad. And look, their body language, you asked the question, what was it going to be like? I thought they were bright. I thought they were lively. I thought even after the first half, when they created a host of chances, and Aaron Ramsdale was very good in the Sheffield United goal, they could have hung their heads at halftime and go, woe is me, here we go again. They didn't. They came out in the second half and played really good football. And look, 2-0, that scoreline could have been 6-0. So they played really well. And look, I think they're on 43 points. They have a real opportunity here with all the circumstances going against them, so it seems, to jump into the top four this week. And so they have all the motivation they need.
I just want to get your take on a player that me and Robbie will talk about all the time. And for the most part, it's very complimentary. I guess in some ways, in some circles, people might argue that the number nine at a club should score more goals than Roberto Firmino does. Now, he made the wonderful assist not long ago. He's still short on goals, really. Is anything changed with him, Tim, first of all, for this season to last season, previous season? Is he still doing what he normally does and that's okay? Or does there come a time where you need a little bit more from your number nine? Are you a fan of Roberto Firmino? Do you think it's a position that they might and they should upgrade? What do you feel about such a popular guy, and he's been such a brilliant player for them, like just today, the chances he missed, and then he makes a goal, it's an own goal, but he creates it. What do you feel about Firmino?
Well, I can't say enough good things about Bobby Firmino. He's not a prolific out-and-out goal scorer. He's unselfish. He works hard. The best number nines in the world are lazy. They get themselves between the posts, and they score goals, and they're lazy. And here's the thing. Can you replace him? Should you replace him? Maybe, but good luck doing it. He plays in a system that Jurgen Klopp asked everything of Bobby Firmino. Don't worry about the goals. Do everything else. Do the ugly work. Assist. Do the dirty work. Run. Track. Be a number six up front and mark the center halves. Where are you going to find a top goal scorer in the world who's going to want to do that work? They don't. And so he's almost irreplaceable. I think they can go out and probably find someone, but he is so underappreciated for the work that he does, because Liverpool don't need an out-and-out number nine. They need a Bobby Firmino. Now, maybe they need an upgrade in that position, but they need someone who's going to be selfless and tireless in their work ethic.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point, Tim, about that. And he's not lazy, so maybe that's why he doesn't get many goals. And if they do have a lazy goal-scoring striker, then in other ways it won't work so much with that press. And we know that Mo Salah's not a... You know, he's a little bit of a luxury at times. He's not going to run all the way back too many times. So it's a really interesting balance and blend that has been brilliant. I sometimes, and I love him, but I sometimes think, you know, when he had the opportunity today to score first half, like, you've got to bury that. You've got to bury it. And he went on the second half and did a really good job. But it's just an interesting take about how he's different.
Yeah.
And obviously, Tim, he's been a crucial part and a critical part of this team going forward. Now, everybody expect them to beat Sheffield United. Their next game is on Thursday. It's 3:15 Eastern time in the afternoon on Peacock Premium. Now, our partners at PointsBet Sportsbook give us odds, Tim, for certain things. And this podcast, we're going to talk about this game here. And they give an odds for this game. Now, Liverpool to win this. Again, it's Liverpool at home against Chelsea on Thursday. Liverpool win is +130. A Chelsea win is +190. And a draw is +250. So, Liverpool are favourites. Just a quick line, Tim, on what you think, you know, based on what we've just seen over in today, how confident are you that Liverpool can beat Chelsea?
Well, I think they can, as I mentioned today on the broadcast, that front three, not very long ago, we were saying is the best front three in world football. I was certainly saying it. I'd hang my hat on that. There was proof in that. They've hit a lull. The whole Liverpool team has hit a lull. On their day, as we saw today, they can create havoc, and it would be very, very difficult for the back three of Chelsea to deal with them. Now, I think the wing backs are going to get pinned back against Chelsea. I think they're going to have to defend with four and five at times, so it will be difficult. My biggest issue, and again, it depends who starts up front, but we talk about Mason Mount. He's normally the first name on a team sheet. Is it going to be Timo Werner? I would play Timo Werner, and simply because Phillips and Kabak aren't up to it. Phillips is a young player. Kubac isn't up to standard of the Premier League. We've seen that over the last couple of games. Now, he needs to find his feet. Sure. Does he need more time? Sure. But he gets himself in really bad positions, in recovery positions, and he's not fast enough to recover. And so we see time and time again the attacking player getting in behind him. He's reading the ball wrong. His positioning is wrong, and his recovery isn't great. And so there's a liability there that I think Chelsea can exploit. And for that reason, I do think Chelsea might just a bit. But the motivation is there for both teams. When you jump into the top four, and that's where these teams are fighting to be.
Yeah, I mean, it changed everything. Tim, I'm looking at the league table right now. Both are the same games played. Liverpool, sixth with 43 points, and Chelsea just 1 point ahead on 44. Absolutely critical in terms of the top four situation. Mm. And I think I'm tending to be on your side here. I think that the centre-backs of Liverpool, I really worry about them. This is a game that Chelsea, with some quick players, strong defensively to handle that front three, as you said. I think they'll score against Liverpool. At Anfield, where we know they've lost the last four. I would give the edge on this to Chelsea. Fascinating game on Thursday, of course, there. And, you know, our odds there again, the odds makers have Liverpool as slight favourites. I'd be backing Chelsea at plus 190 here. I think they can go there and get the victory and really help their chances of the top four spot.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Okay, back to games, my friend. And Spurs beat Burnley 4-0 in a lineup that looked a lot more like what the Spurs fans, I think, expected to see a few more times. Tim Carey Kane up front, Heung-min Son on the left-hand side, Lucas playing as a 10, and Gareth Bale playing on the right-hand side. A fast start from Spurs. I mean, Gareth Bale, isn't it? I mean, Jose Mourinho's been... I'm not sure. It's probably not right to say he's been stubborn about this. We don't know what's behind the scenes in terms of what his fitness levels, his desire to play that Jose kind of hinted at maybe a couple of weeks ago. But he's looking better. He started. His quality was there to see. Is it about time, Tim? And surely he's gonna start whenever possible now.
Well, you know, Gareth Bale gets my underappreciated player of the week, simply because we don't know what happened.
Why is manager underappreciated?
Underappreciated by Jose Mourinho, certainly. Now, the caveat is we don't know what's happened behind the scenes. Was he not fit? Was Jose just being stubborn and saying, I don't think you can play in my system. I asked too much of my wingers. Whatever the case may be, clearly he's been underappreciated because over the last four games, we have seen Gareth Bale is a world-class player. That can't be understated. He is, clearly. And world-class players, they don't lose that class. You saw it today. Scored the goal, got it out of his feet. Doesn't give Nick Pope, the goalkeeper, any chance. I mean, it was that good of a strike into the bottom corner. And then you mentioned on the broadcast just that raking ball from back to front to Harry Kane. Very few players on the pitch can do that. He did it with ease. He looked up, he saw it, just clipped it in there. It was inch perfect. He, for me, is someone who, as Tottenham go, we ask you know, Rebecca, does she think, you know, Tottenham is in the hunt for the fourth place spot? They have to be, if Bale can continue on this run. They've got a lot of big games coming up. You know, Jose's going to have to chop and change the squad. But you saw today, I mean, Ndombele and Højbjerg just in the middle of midfield there. That's their strongest pairing. And then up front, Son, Lucas Moura, who looks really good now. He looks in good form. He's running well. He's in the pockets. He's getting beyond the defensive line. Harry Kane, I mean, what can you say? He's shown his class every single game this season, even when teams try and stop him. And then, you know, Son and Bale on either side.
I think it's fair to say that Gareth Bale will never be that incredibly fast, direct, dribbling player that we all loved, right, a few years ago. He ain't going to be that, Tim. But what he showed today, and, you know, listen, people might say it's just Burnley, but what he showed is quality. Quality on the ball. Quality passing, quality finishing, assisting. You know, he didn't need to show any pace today. Mm. Without the pace, he's still a quality footballer. He's still got a lovely technique. He still can bend that ball in, play the passes. He can still add to this team and make it better than a Lamella in the side. Or maybe, if you know, I'd still rather have him than Lucas in the side. You could play other players in the 10.
Oh, yeah.
We're waiting to see if Dele Alli is going to come back into it. But I think what we've seen over the last couple of days is, he's not going to be the guy maybe the Spurs fans hoped, but probably smart enough to realize it, they won't get it. But he's still a player with talent. He's still a player with an eye for goal. He's still a player that produces goals and assists and positive action. Now, I think you can balance off the team around him. And maybe there's games where he won't play because he won't do the defensive side. That's just Jose's way.
Sure.
But I think it was a really good day for him to say, and he's had recent decent performances, I should be in this team. I do make this team better, and a really big day. So interesting. Yeah, you're underappreciated, certainly by the manager, maybe by players, just viewers of Spurs and Bale recently that maybe just don't realize what a talented boy he is.
Yeah,
and we saw it today. So well done, Spurs. I think you're right. I mean, they're only, what is it? They're on 39 points, 6 points behind the fourth spot with a game in hand. I mean, there's plenty of games left. They can grind their way back into it. I think that's going to be the race that we're going to enjoy this season, is a race for the top four. Okay, in that conversation, certainly one of these teams, Leicester City. We're going to talk about that game next. Leicester City 1, Arsenal 3 again, two sides to this conversation, Tim. I want to go with the positive. I want to go with Arsenal. And I got to be honest, when I saw the lineup with no Aubameyang and no Saka, Pepe and Willian in the wider areas, two players that haven't really done it, they did it. They played well. Arsenal... Yeah. They sometimes surprise me, Tim, because I don't really know what the definitive kind of thought process is on Arsenal. Sometimes they can look really good where, like, this is on the right track. You look at the league table, they're still in 10th spot. But this was a lot better, Tim, wasn't it, given the team and you know, given their recent matches. That's a good win away at Leicester.
Well, I think it's massive because when, as you said, the team sheets came out, I think they turned the narrative on its head. You know, I'm thinking Aubameyang, Saka, Partey on the bench. What's Mikel Arteta doing? Lacazette, he's flattered to deceive this year. Willian's given Arsenal nothing. And Pepe, for this big price tag, he's also been hot and cold and somewhat non-existent. So you're thinking, what's going on here? And Pepe, for me, was man of the match. He was involved in everything. He wanted the spotlight. He wanted the ball in big moments. He almost made a penalty, got the free kick outside the box, scored the goal, made the other penalty, slipping over and Didi having a handball. So he was involved in everything. Lacazette finishing off the penalty, always in the right areas, particularly in between the goalposts. When the questions were asked, he was in the thick of it. And so really good performance by Arsenal, one that I wasn't expecting when I saw the lineup.
You know, we have another show, the Lowdown Show, that is also on YouTube and NBC Sports channel. Whether the manager, we asked Rebecca, whether the manager, Mikel Arteta, should be under more pressure, given we're on the league table. Do you think he should be under more pressure, Tim? Do you believe that he's got everything he needs to take this club forward, given, which I think is a really important point, given the finances to try and rebuild the squad a little bit?
Yeah. Look, when they invested, not just money, but faith in Mikel Arteta, they had to give him time simply because there was too much excess baggage in the club that needed getting out the door, and you couldn't do that immediately. They've started that process, particularly with Ozil. He had young players in the team that they need to bring through, being taught the Arsenal way. And also, when you build a football club, it has to resemble the manager, and he simply just hasn't had enough time and enough transfer windows to bring in the players that he wanted to bring in. Now, certainly he's gotten Odegaard through the door, and that's a player that he's been chasing and he won. But there needs to be more of those, and they had to get that excess baggage out of the door so that Mikel Arteta could replenish his squad. And so, look, it's just going to simply be a down year for Arsenal. I think they understand that, but I think they're going to keep faith with the manager and not just look to league position and not just look to wins and losses, but how is the progression of the squad. And I think we saw on balance today, you know, a guy like Pepe and Lacazette, the manager is having an influence on those players.
We'll get to Leicester City in a minute, Tim, but I just want to follow up on that. And this is where I'm worried about the future of Arsenal. Young players obviously have given a real boost this season. I like the manager. I think he's a smart guy that needs time and needs windows. Again, a question. Stan Kroenke is the owner of this football club. The Kroenkes own it. They own American sports franchise as well. I'm not sure how much you know about the Kroenkes. Are you, because I'm not, are you confident they are invested enough, both spiritually and financially, to get this club back to where it belongs? Because Arsenal, as you know, is a giant of a football club in North London. I worry that and I know it's difficult with the pandemic and the finances of football clubs that have been affected by this, and it may be the same for all clubs, but over the next 1, 2, 3 years, is the investment going to be there to bring this club back to where it belongs?
Well, I think the Kroenkes have certainly invested in Arsenal Football Club, and I think now what we have to look at, the future of Arsenal Football Club, is they've taken on a new direction with Edu as a sporting director and Mikel Arteta combined with him in partnership making all the football decisions. So I think you have to give – now that structure has only been in place for a very short period of time, months even. So you have to give that time. No one wants to give time in the Premier League. There's no patience. I understand that. But you have to give that time. I think that can bear fruit, but it's only going to be in the future over the next 1, 2, and 3 seasons. But, yes, I think the investment is there from the Kroenkes, and it's just a matter of getting that right in terms of at the boardroom level, how is the structure. They've gotten a lot of these scouts out the door that they didn't need, and they're trusting in Edu and Arteta. So all the eggs are in that basket, and so we'll see how that goes.
Leicester City, Tim, really disappointing for them. Really disappointing performance, I thought. Harvey Barnes is the latest player to go down with what it seems a serious injury. We know reports from the football club is that he's looking at a knee operation. He's going to be out maybe more than 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Are we going to see a little bit like last season, Tim, where Leicester have such a great season and just through injuries and fatigue and whatever, they're going to fall away? They're in a great position right now. They're still 49 points. They're in third. Are you fearing, like I am, that they're going to drop out the top four given the amount of injuries to key players over a longer period of time?
Well, you have to feel for him, right? You know, Vardy missed some time due to an operation. He's back and getting amongst the goals. But when you see Madison go down recently and then you see Barnes today, you just – the wind gets taken out of your sails if you're a Leicester City fan. You just think, here we go again. Because, you know, with Ndidi and Tielemans and Vardy and Madison and Barnes, they really have the look of a team who could push at the top. And they have been. You know, listen, they're only human. So when – you know, when your best players go down, your best players provide quality. When that quality is not there, you do suffer. I think at 49 points, there's enough of a cushion. Now, they'd have to go into a complete free fall, I think, in order to not make the top four. But right now, I do think they have enough power, enough juice to get some results that will just keep inching them up the table. And here's the thing. We always count them out. We always count them out. They love that. They love flying under the radar. They, you know, at 49 points, they only need to keep ticking over and getting a few wins here and there, which I think they will do because Brendan Rodgers sets them up in a really good way to be successful. And they have a good back four, Kasper Schmeichel in goal. I think they're really solid back there. So I do think just they'll hang on to the top four.
Yeah, see, I don't. I think with you looking at Madison on the sidelines for a little while, Harvey Barnes as well, that they're so important players going forward to score and supply for Jamie Vardy. Sure. Defensive players, James Justin, Fofana, Madison, Pratt. I mean, I'm just going through my list here of injured players. I don't know. They got to regroup him and they got to find a different solution. You know, very much on the back foot, very happy to sit back and try and counter against Arsenal. And Arsenal really took advantage of them. So, again, a fascinating story. And another club that's right in this race for the top four. Just going around, Tim, just looking at other results. And not that we have to get into details of this game too much. West Brom are obviously fighting for their lives. Yeah. Big Sam has made a lot of changes. And I think they're just going to run out of time.
Oh, yeah.
I think they will get better. I think there's signs they're getting better. They get a clean sheet somehow. Brighton missed two penalties. I just want to have a little line, a little take on Lee Mason, the referee. Now, mm-hmm. On this podcast, we don't really get into hammering referees too much. Mm. But this was kind of unusual where, you know, we've been there. And I think it's interesting maybe to get both of our takes. So you're the goalkeeper, Tim, right? I've got a free kick.
Yeah.
And I know from my – and I did it as a player. I know that a great chance of scoring is when you're on your post lining up the wall. So the ball is down there. The referee's always close. I am always, and I did always, when I was on free kicks, ref can have a quick one. Because you have to ask them.
Sure.
And they either say, yes, you can, and they get out of the way. And don't blow the whistle, by the way. They don't. Yeah. Back then, they didn't have to. Like, okay, the referee gets out of the way, and I take it, and I maybe try and score. Or if, for whatever reason, you know, the wall is still, you know, he's still marked, you know, he'll say, no, wait for the whistle, you know, he'll show the whistle, and then he paces out the 10 yards, everybody gets set, and everybody's got to wait for the whistle.
Yep.
Now, Lewis Dunk did this today, Tim, and he said to the referee, can I have a quick one? And the referee, Lee Mason, said yes, and actually blew his whistle.
Sure.
And Dunk, to be fair, smart, he's right by the ball, so he has like one or two steps, bends it into the corner, and then before the ball goes over the line, Lee Mason thinks, oh, I shouldn't have done that, blows the whistle again. So then VAR can get involved because the ball never crossed the line.
Right.
Okay, so my take is you let him have it, you blow the whistle, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. He bailed out Tim. So so I'll get your take on it after, but you describe how you treat that incident, Tim, when I'm on the ball and you've got to try and line up the wall, but also make sure you're not caught out on a quick free kick. How did you do that?
Right. So we talk about alarm bells. So I understand that a prerequisite to take a free kick has nothing to do with whether the goalkeeper is ready or not. That doesn't go into the referee's checklist. Is the wall 10 yards away? Yes. Are they encroaching? No, they're not.
Right.
Ball is set. Everyone's happy. Right. We play. Never in my career has it ever been, well, we'll wait for the goalkeeper to get set. Never happens. So when I'm on my near post and I'm setting up the wall, I have an alarm clock that starts going where I'm saying, I've got enough time here. I'm looking through the wall. My wall's getting set. Who's over the ball? Who's close to the ball? Can they take it quickly? Is the referee standing over the ball? If the referee starts backing away, I abandon ship. Forget the wall. I'm going back across, and I'm going to handle my side of the wall. So goalkeepers don't get the rubber of the green there. They don't get to say, hey, just wait for me. So that's the goalkeeper's take on it. And that's what I believe where Lee Mason, unfortunately, and he's human, he got it wrong. It was a massive error, which got compounded by the way he reacted afterwards because he did the right thing. Lewis Dunk, from his word, says to Lee Mason, can I take the free kick? Yes, you can. Whistle blows. Everyone's happy. Takes the free kick. At that point, it should have been done and dusted. What we think, and I know we agree on this, Lee Mason's looked up. He's seen the goalkeeper at the near post, out of position, blows the whistle again in a bit of a panic. Then he says, no goal. Pressure from both sides of players. Points to the center circle, says goal. Then calls it back. And so he got himself into a real bind because he made the mistake of blowing the double whistle, which canceled out the goal. And then he changed his mind a couple times before going over to the monitor and looking at VAR.
Yeah, it was a mess, wasn't it? Just another. So Sam Johnston, he was at fault as well then, Tim, because he didn't have his alarm set correctly, and he spent too much time over there. So he could. I mean, I think he's had a pretty good season in a difficult team.
Mm-hmm.
He could have and should have done a better job of being wary of that as well.
100%. It's a goalkeeper responsibility. Get over, get his wall set, get his troops in the right position. And like I said, there have been times where my wall wasn't set to the exact specifications that I want simply because I saw the referee getting ready to back away from the ball, which to me signaled it's game on. So the wall, I'll cross my fingers, hope the wall's in the right place, but I've got to get back across the other side of the goal.
Final point, Tim. If I'm in your team, right, and you're lining up the wall, if I'm not in the wall, you know what I'm doing? I'm by the ball.
Yes, standing over the ball.
I'm in the way. I'm kind of giving it one of them.
Sure.
I'm in the way. That's one of the first things we, you know, it's harder to do it now because the yellow cards for for stopping a quick free kick, but I'm still finding a way to argue the referee or something from and being in the line. So he can't do that. It gives you time, Tim, to line up. I'm delaying, basically.
Well, let me say that that's the best point anyone's made on the entire weekend, because what we thought we knew about Sam Allardyce is the fine, minute details are always sorted, always taken care of. In this particular reign, since he's taken over West Brom, we haven't seen that. He's a master. You know this from down the years. He's a master at set-piece situations, the ones that he can control. And 100%, a player always stands over the ball. And it's not belligerent, and it's not blatant where you get a yellow card. It's backing off. It's turning your back to talk to someone, making a referee blow the whistle 8 times and say, hey, number 11. Move back, that buys the goalkeeper and the wall time to set, and then everyone's happy. They didn't have a player standing over the ball, and that is a detail that was missed by a Sam Allardyce West Bromwich team.
Just finally on this, Tim, and the referees, this debate's gone on before, but wouldn't it be a good idea if a referee, after the game, did one interview with maybe the host broadcaster where he addressed certain situations in the game? Wouldn't that clarify some things that people don't know? Wouldn't that humanize referees a little bit more? I mean, it's something that the Premier League and the PGML don't want to go down that road. But do you think it would help, even after a game where Lee Mason clearly had a bit of a nightmare? Would it help?
There's only one answer to that, and the answer is yes. But referees should absolutely talk to the media and to the public, and here's why. Not so fans and pundits can hammer them. They're going to do that anyway. Fans do that all the time. They hammer referees, right? That's what I would like to see as an outside observer is simply this. There are times when a referee makes a decision, we don't know why he made it. We don't know why Lee Mason blew his whistle twice. Yeah. We don't know why the referee today didn't call a handball on Hudson-Odoi. Just to explain it, because there are times where we just need an explanation where we could go, huh, okay, now we might then analyze that decision, but at least we have a very clear-cut version of why the decision was made. Yeah. One, and this, look, it doesn't have to ramble on. Referees are going to have a few contentious moments in the game. If they're able to come out and clarify them, just to say, this is what I saw, this is why myself and my assistant referees made the decision, great. Yeah. Everyone's happy, we have clarity, and we move on.
I think maybe people wouldn't expect it, but I think people do appreciate that. And they understand that referees got a really difficult job and are human. So I totally agree. I totally agree. Whether we'll see it, I don't know, but I totally agree. Listen, Tim, we're just going to wrap up now. And if you've got a thought on any of these remaining games, Leeds 0, Villa 1, good result for Aston Villa away at Elland Road there. Newcastle 1, Wolves 1, and another draw, Palace 0, Fulham 0. Just looking at the bottom of the table, my friend. And we know that Fulham have still got a chance to make up the difference. They're just 3 points, same games played, 3 points behind Newcastle. Newcastle with more injured players in their side. Just to kind of finish up the pod on the relegation picture, do you think that Fulham will catch them? Are they scoring? They didn't score this weekend. Have they potentially got the goals in them to overtake Newcastle, given the result and given the injuries that they've got right now?
Well, it's a tricky one, right? I think with Fulham, they missed an opportunity, but they kept a clean sheet and they got the point. What I always say about Fulham is that their players up front aren't prolific. But when we look at Cavalera and we look at Lookman and Bobby Di Cordova Reed and Loftus-Cheek, they have the threat of a match winner. And that's more than I can say for Newcastle before the injuries. Now you look at Callum Wilson, you look at Joe Ellington, you look at St. Maximin.
I think he's injured.
I mean, Almiron is injured. Like, this is a big, massive problem for a team that was already trending downward to not have arguably three of your best players, but almost three of your only players who give any threat. That's a real worry for Steve Bruce.
Tim Howard, it's been an absolute pleasure. It's flown by, mate. Some really good and different takes on all the games from this weekend in the Premier League. It's always fascinating. It's always fascinating for our listeners and viewers to see it, to get a bit more of you and your opinion. So thank you very, very much for standing in this. We hope to have you again sometime, maybe with Robbie Earle as well. The three of us can jump on a show and give our opinions again. So thank you very much. And to everybody else, the next episode of the Two Robbies podcast will be Thursday on March the 4th, just recapping the midweek Premier League matches. There's more Premier League matches coming up this midweek. So from Tim, from Robbie Musto, thank you so much for listening and for watching. Stay safe, and we'll see you next time. See ya.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.